Okay. So the first part of Choshen Mishpat really is Hilchos Dayanim and basic principles of Eidos. We're only going to do select parts of it. Just a little bit of background for those of you who haven't learned Shulchan Aruch before, and I don't mean Mishnah, but I mean actually learned Shulchan Aruch in terms of the Shulchan Aruch itself. If one is learning Shulchan Aruch and Halacha properly, and more frequently my sense is that it's not learned properly, but when you are doing it properly, the first thing you do, theoretically you do all the sugyas in the Gemara, but even to the extent that you're not doing Gemara, you begin with the Tur and the Beis Yosef. The Tur is really forms the spine or the backbone of the Shulchan Aruch in terms of the order and the structure. The four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch are in fact following the four Chalakim of the Tur. The Tur was authored by Rav Yaakov ben Asher, the son of the Rush, and he basically collects, he presents his own opinions, but basically he's citing mostly the major Torah of the Gaonim and Chachmei Sfarad, and then frequently his father as well. Probably the most common expression in the Tur is, Adoni Avi HaRush wrote, and so on. So the Tur basically gave us our four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. The four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch are Orachayim, which deals with Brachos, Tvila, Kriya Shema, Shabbos Yom Tov, and all the Yom Tov, and the Rabbanans also, Rosh Chodesh, and Kriya Satorah thrown in there. The second Chalak, I believe there is an order actually to which they were composed. There's certainly an order to which they were printed, but I think if you look in the Hakdamas of the Tur, you'll see, I think that Choshen Mishpat was last. Yoredeya, which deals with Isser V'Heter, begins with Shechita, Kisedam, Trefos. Some of you certainly know Basar V'Chalav and Taroves and Malicha, and it deals with Machalei Akum and Yayin Nesach and Hilchos Nida, Hilchos Avelos and Ribis, Hilchos Talmud Torah, Kibbut Avaim, Avadim, Geirus, anything that would be classified as Isser V'Heter. That, by the way, Yoredeya was heavily dependent upon what Sefer? The Torah Sabai, said the Rashba, certainly the first part. The third chelik of the Torah was Evan HaEzer, which deals with Inyani Nashim, Kiddushin, Ksubos, Yuchsin, Gittin, Yibum and Chalitza. And finally, the fourth chelik deals with Choshen Mishpat, is Choshen Mishpat, which deals with all aspects of civil law. Of course, it should not be overlooked the fact that there is a fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch known as the Seichel HaYashar, and one who is not Bucky in the fifth Chalak of Shulchan Aruch should be very wary about paskening in the first four Chalakim. That is a rather unfortunate thing. I suspect that today more than ever you'll find people who are Bekiyim in the fourth Chalak, but not four Chalakim, but not in the fifth. I suspect that until the last 50 to 100 years you probably didn't find such a thing. That'd be my guess, but okay. Anyway, on the Tur, which was written, which was finished probably, I think, in the earlier part, the first half of the 14th century, where it was written originally one commentary, one major commentary, and that is the most important work of Rav Yosef Karo, and that is the Beis Yosef. Contrary to popular perception, and for those who were here, who were in the shir last year and did enough halacha, please forgive me for saying this, I know you're hearing this again, but the Shulchan Aruch, contrary to popular perception, is not really the Mechaber Sefer Pesach, it's really just a summary, it's notes of the conclusions that he comes from the Beis Yosef. The real Sefer Pesach is the Beis Yosef. There are rare occasions where he seems to differ from what he writes in the Beis Yosef, but as a general rule, the Beis Yosef is his work. It's his magnum opus, and it's his it's work of Pesach Halach as well. You should be aware, aside from the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch of Yosef Karo, is one other very important work, which is the Kesef of Mishnah and the Rambam. It's not clear which he wrote first, the Beis Yosef or the Kesef of Mishnah, but you will frequently find passages that are duplicated between the two of them. Remember that the Mechaber already lived in the time just after printing had begun. So as opposed to Rishonim, for where the Kisveyat are particularly important, for the Mechaber they are less so important. The printings are actually more important. A couple of guys in Rabbi Willig's shiur this morning had a question about certain parentheses and something in Orachayim about Shabbos, in Hilchos Shabbos, which were these words in parentheses, which explained a passage in Yerushalmi. It was like a commentary where to come from, and they thought it might have been from the Beis Yosef. So I actually went online to the Jewish National Library's digital book repository and found the, I don't know if it was the first edition, I don't think it was the first print edition of the Torah, but it might have been the first of the Torah in Beis Yosef, I'm not sure. It was from 1550, I think, or it was Or HaChaim, and in it, those parentheses were not there. So it's actually the first time I've ever seen an edition of the Torah where you have a Torah and a Beis Yosef and no Bach on the other side. The Bach was written, I think, 17th century, Rav Yoel Sirkis, so that, you know, here you have a Torah and a Beis Yosef with nothing else on it. And most people who learn, I suspect, don't learn the Bach. The Bach is a repository of very interesting shittos, shall we put it that way, to say the least. But anyway, so the Beis Yosef is really, what Beis Yosef does is he cites most of the Makaros, the Gemaras, other Rishonim, even the Torah doesn't quote, and then he's Machriah. The general, al derech haklal, what is the Beis Yosef's rule of psak? He has a rule. I'm going to kill some of you if you don't know this rule. What's that? The big three, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rush. He takes the majority of those three. He writes this in the introduction to the Beis Yosef. And he's going to paskin like a majority of the three. If there's no majority, if it's a split, then he mentions other Rishonim he's going to rely upon. He doesn't really always follow this rule. It's just not true. And Yoredei, I think he's heavily influenced by the Rashba. In this siman, actually, in fact, he sort of ignores the Rush and the Rif against the Rambam, because the Rush and the Rif aren't explicitly against the Rambam, so he chooses to follow the Rambam. There's one place in the Beis Yosef. But that's his Derech Klal. Obviously, the Shulchan Aruch reflects that psak, and that obviously creates a problem for Ashkenazim, because when you decide that you're going to paskin like a majority of the big three, since the Rambam and the almost never disagrees with the Rif, you know, maybe they say 30 places or something like that. I think the Rambam may say that somewhere. So the net outcome of that, well, basically, it's a stacked deck. The Ramah, and I'm not going to read it, but if you have the time. You know, Bisman, if you have the time, I understand that your schedules often make that very difficult. So it means Bisman shalom hulo yom velo laila. I understand that. But it means that somewhere in the back burner in your head, when you look forward to those days of leisure when you have time to learn, you know, b'malkom shalibo chafet. So you should read introductions, and it's very interesting to read the Ramah's introduction to his version of the Beis Yosef, which was known as the Darkei Moshe. It was never as extensive as the Beis Yosef, but it duplicated a lot. And because it was duplicated a lot, the printers truncated it. Unfortunately, they destroyed it in the process, but there is a Darkei Moshe Aruch, which in the fancy tours they print in the back. It's also been published separately. It's not as long as the Beis Yosef, but what the Darkei Moshe does, what the Ramah does, what he adds to the Beis Yosef and disagrees with the Beis Yosef, is he brings a lot more of the Ashkenazi Torah, especially the late Ashkenazi Rishonim. He writes something very interesting there, which is that... that in his early career, it sounds like the Ramah used to be heavily biased towards paskening, like Tosfos and the Rush, the early Ashkenazi Rishonim, which is very much the style of the Mechaber in terms of Chachmei Sfarad. In other words, the earlier the better. But in Ashkenaz, that wasn't what was happening. What was happening in Ashkenaz is that you always follow the Minhag, even if it might have been against the Gemara, against the early Rishonim, which meant they followed much more the later Rishonim of Ashkenaz, the Rav Yaakov Weil, the Maril, you know, the Rav Yosef Kalon, the Marik. In the the earliest of the late was probably the Mordechai, the Maharal Meir-Rutenberg, all these very all on the relatively later side, and there are others. I'm not mentioning Shari Dura. Went for those who did Yoredeya. The Ramah says that early in his career he used to paskin like earlier, and he got hit over the head for it in Krakow, and then he ended up sort of recognizing the importance of all these later Sfarim. Came the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber Paskin, the way the Mechaber Paskin, and there was a problem. So what did the Ramah write? He wrote the tablecloth for the Shulchan Aruch, called the Mapa. That's what it's called. And you know it as the Hagaz, but it's actually the Sefer was HaMapa. And you will find very early printed Shulchan Aruchs with just the Mechaber and the Ramah. And that's what the Ramah did. He really brought in Taras Ashkenaz. Okay. Anyway, so that is sort of that's the origin of the Shulchan Aruch. That's really what its genesis is, starting with the Tur, which has precursors, but really the Tur is sort of the original work, followed by the Beis Yosef, the Darkei Moshe, and then ultimately the Chaber and the Ramah. As far as the Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch, each Shulchan Aruch, each Chelek has two major Nosei Kelim. They're defined as major primarily because the printer's printed in that way. The Taz is printed as one of the big two, in Or HaChaim and Yerideya. For some reason, I don't know why, I mean, I can guess why, he's only printed on the bottom. He seems more, at least, peripheral in terms of Choshen Mishpat. The Shach, wrote on two halakim, as far as I'm aware, and it's printed both there, both in Yerudea, and on Choshen Mishpat. The other major, in some ways, I'm going to say more important commentary, major commentary on Choshen Mishpat, the one that you read first, because it was written first, and the Shach quotes it all the time, is the Sma. The Sefer Me'ir Seinayim was written by Rabbi Yoshua, I think, Falk, I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Falk. Falk. He was also the author of the, what? No, I don't think it's the same person. The Prisha and the Drisha, which are commentaries printed, the other major commentaries, the three other major commentaries, they read the two, which are printed on the tour, are the Bach and the Prisha and the Drisha, which was written by the author of the Sma, Rabbi Yeshua Falk. Okay. Anyway, so I've given you a selection. Generally, when you prepare halacha, I'm going to give you the siman. I will send you the tour and the Beis Yosef, because there aren't enough copies in the Beis Medrash. I recommend, if you have your own Shulchan Aruch, you want to use it, you may like it more, it may have the more genuine feel, you know, the Tzur Sadaf, although there's no official Tzur Sadaf quite the same way you have as of the Vilna Shas. And I'll send you, if there are no Sekalim I want you to look at. Sometimes I'll send you Makars as well, if you have time, if you want to read some of the Gemaras and Rishonim first, just because they sort of provide the underpinnings.
Are you doing this all year? Like, would it be worth like buying one, or are you jumping around?
We will be jumping around. In other words, I highly recommend every Jewish home of someone who's a Yudea Sefer should have a tour and a Shulchan Aruch in it. Now, depending on what set you choose to get, what?
That's what a wedding is for.
That's only if you want to wait till start learning until your wedding, Cinnamon, okay? Is there anything you want to tell us or no? No, okay, I'm sorry. There are more expensive editions, less expensive editions. The printings have gotten better, though the less expensive ones are still photo offsets of printings of 100 years ago. But it's kedai. I think in some ways it's even more kedai to have a tour Beis Yosef than it is to have to pick one before getting a Shulchan Aruch. And you can get sets. Again, I'm not saying everybody has the money to throw around, but probably it's from, say, you can find a set decent set for $100 of tour Beis Yosef. But again, even if you can't, you should always know that that's how you're supposed to learn halacha. First, read. If you're not learning the Masechta, if you're not going back, sometimes you have to go back and learn Gemaras anyway. You have to go back and look at the Gemara because you can't figure out, you don't understand from the Beis Yosef is quoting. But if you have some familiarity in Shas or with the particular Gemaras, you read the Beis Yosef, you will get get the foundations. If you try reading a Shulchan Aruch alone without looking at the precursors, you are likely to make some very serious errors, because you simply will not understand the background against which the Shulchan Aruch is being written. Okay. Anyway, those I suspect from a Sephardic background or a Sephardic style of learning, particularly, are probably more aware of this, because probably Beit Yosef is quoted all the time. But nonetheless, anybody who's learning halacha, that is the way it should be learned. Okay. Fine. Hilchos Dayanim. There is a mitzvah of Minui Dayanim. We read about it. I can still call it last week's Parsha Shoftim. Shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha b'chal sharecha asher Hashem lekecha nosein lecha l'shvatecha v'shafetu asa'am mishpat zedek. So there is a mitzvah for Minui Dayanim in all the cities, for all the shvatim, which applies, according to the Gemara, in Eretz Yisrael, in every city. In Chutz Laretz, you don't have to have shoftim in every city, but you do need to have some availability of shoftim. That is the mitzvah. The definition of a shofet in halacha is a person who is given, who is a musmach, he has real smicha, something we'll talk about a little bit, and he has the power to be kofe balei din and to be done in front of him. Meaning, as opposed to today, where if you, at least outside of Israel, if you don't want to go to a particular base, then nobody can force you to go to that base. So a dayan who was a mumcha, musmach, had the power, if one of the parties certainly wanted under certain circumstances, he could be kofe the balei din to be done in front of him. A dayan who is a musmach can judge basically all sorts of dinim, with the exception of dinim that can't be judged because the particular historical period doesn't allow it. So for a dayan, for a beis din to judge capital cases for capital cases, certainly, one requires a beis din yoshev b'lishkas hagazus. A historical reality, at least according to the Gemara, disappeared 40 years before the Churban. But in order to be able to be done, even bisman beis hamikdash, even when there was a Sanhedrin lishkas hagazus, you need that 23 dayanim smuchim. For malchus as well, you require dayanim smuchim. This is, by the way, some of you may be familiar with the great smicha controversy. There were actually two smicha controversies in history. The first one was in the Mishnah Chagiga, but that was about smicha and karbanos on Yom Tov. The second, more famous smicha controversy took place in the 16th century when the Maribe Rav got together in Sfat. I think it was the Maribe Rav. He was the Mechaber's Rebbe? Is that right? Am I getting that right?
I don't know. But he wrote
well, I'm trying to remember who was the Mechai. I think he was the one, he was the head of it. And then, so he was Rav Yosef Karo's Rebbe. And in Sfat, they decided that they had the authority to reinstitute Smicha following the Rambam's hypothetical position in the Perush HaMishnayos and Bechoros, that after the Smicha disappeared from Eretz Yisrael, how could we ever have Smicha again? And you have to, because Elio is supposed to appear in front of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, and if there's no smicha, so how do you have a Sanhedrin HaGadol? So the Rambam thought that if all the Rabbanim got together, all the Rabbanim Eretz Yisrael got together and agreed that that they should restart the smicha, they could restart the smicha, and that would be considered the equivalent of smicha ishmi pi yishan Moshe Rabbeinu. And so I think it was the Maribe Rav who they gave smicha to, and then he was so mech, I think something like five disciples, so the Rav Yosef Karo being amongst them. Suffice it to say, the Jerusalem rabbinate, Rav Levi ibn Chabib, the Marabach, who was at the head of that rabbinate, was not very enthralled with this. They did not feel that they were participants, nor were they in agreement with this. And he has a very, very long troop of response challenging the validity of it, and the smicha died. It lasted one generation and didn't go on after that. So we don't really have Dayan Smuchim, but why do they want to reinstitute the smicha? So apparently, I don't know who says this, it's maybe Radvanz, or maybe this is just urban legend, but they wanted to reinstitute the smicha because they wanted to give Malkus to the Maranos, because kol chayv kresos shelaku nishtru midei kresasan. Any person who's chayv kares, which they assume that the Maranos were, but that could be a debatable point if they converted under duress. If you're chayv kares and you get malchus, you're pater from the kares. So that's why they wanted to reinstitute smicha. Anyway, it didn't last very long. So the bottom line is that all rabbis today are fake rabbis. Okay, we're not real rabbis. We'll talk a little bit about what that smicha is. Now, the importance, though, of not having dayan smuchim relates to the fact that in order to have a dayan on anything in theory, one is required to have dayan, and we call it dayan mumchim, dayan smuchim. Mumcha doesn't technically have to mean only samuch, but that's what it usually means. And in order to be a judge, you have to have smicha, which means not only we don't have rabbis, we don't have dayanim either. Now, the Gemara already is aware of this in the first sugi in Sanhedrin, that you can, that certainly a place like Bavel, how are you going to have dayanim? How are you going to function day to day? Because you can't give smicha in Chutz Laretz. You can get smicha in Eretz Yisrael and leave and go to Chutz Laretz, and dayanim asmuchim be'Eretz Yisrael have the authority and the capability of judging cases in Chutz Laretz. But the bottom line is, there weren't many musmachim in Chutz Laretz. You know the distinction in the Gemara between what and what? Rav and Rebbe. The distinction, you got to be careful with kisrayad and abbreviations, but Rebbe, or Resh with a strich, which stands for Rebbe, not Rav, means that he had smicha. Ravuna did not have smicha. The only well-known Amora of Bavel who had smicha, and he only had two of the three smichas, although that may have been a funny kind of distinction, was Rav. Rav received smicha from Rebbe. He received what the Gemara termed yoreh, yadin, but yater b'choros al yater. He didn't have the third smicha. Today, our imitation smicha has yoreh, and yadin. Nobody bothers with yater b'choros. But the Amoraim in Bavel did not have smicha. The Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, for the most part, until they disappeared, did have smicha. So the problem in Bavel, of course, is what do you do? How do you function day to day if you don't have dayanim? You don't have dayanim who are capable of judging cases. So the Gemara makes clear in the first sugya that you could have gimel hadyotos for certain kinds of dine mamanos. What the Gemara in Sanhedrin there says is that for hoda'os and halva'os, which are some of the basic elements of commerce, hoda'os and halva'os is a person, admits to owing another person money in front of Edom, or a person lends money to another person in front of Edom. Those basic elements of commerce, the Gemara assumes you can have gimel hadyotos do, or Yochid Mumcha, perhaps, as well. So that's already the first indication of having dinim done by people who are not smuchim. On what basis are they entitled to judge such cases? So it's in this case, one of you just said, that shlichu sayukav dinim. The Gemara will say in a couple of contexts, the sugya in Gittin, the sugya in the Perakachova, which were both on the Mekoros, that the dayanim in Bavel, the non-smuchim, operate as the agents of the Dayanim in Eretz Yisrael, those who are smuchim. Anan shlichusayu ka'avdinan. We are doing their shlichus. So the Baalei Tosfos point out, though, that that was very nice and fine in the times of the Amoraim, when there were smuchim in Eretz Yisrael, so the Amoraim in Bavel could function as Dayanim. But what happens when you live in a time period in which there are no smuchim anywhere? So it's to that that the Baalei Tosfos comment that Anan shlichusayu de kamai avdinan. We are doing the shlichus of the original musmachim, the last musmachim, the last of the musmachim. I'll make a movie out of it. And so we are doing their shlichus. Okay, we are doing their shlichus. Now, one of the most significant things to emerge from the sugya in Perek HaChovel is that the shlichus that we do on behalf of the last musmachim of Eretz Yisrael is a limited shlichus. It does not apply to all areas of halacha. And the Gemara, that sugya, which is a very important sugya, establishes two basic principles that are required in order to be done dinim without dayanim mumchen. What are they? It has to be shchiach, and has to have chisaron kis. So something that's, I don't describe rare, something that's uncommon, so the dayanim are not authorized to judge. So, for example, the case of Ones and Mefateh, which comes up, Ones comes up in this week's parasha, Mefateh is Mishpatim. So these are not common things. They certainly weren't common things. I don't think they're still that common in the firm community today. And therefore, well, they're certainly not common in the typical Mescaris of Anara, that's for sure. And therefore, what's that? Ones, Mefateh and Mishpatim. This week's parasha is only Ones, of a single woman, of a non-married girl. It's only Ones is in this week's parasha, Mefateh is in Mishpatim.
Doesn't mean Mefateh.
What?
Usfasa doesn't mean
Mefateh. No. Usfasa means he grabs her. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been described Tachas Asher Inna, right? He didn't afflict her. In Mishpatim, it's just V'chifateh ish b'sula shalaras v'shachav imah. There's no description of Inu. There's no tsar there because it was done by Ratza. Okay, so what has to be number one, shricha, and secondly, it has to chisaron kis. So, for example, something that doesn't involve actually financial loss. So, if you injure somebody, for sure the tsar that they suffer, I'm not talking about loss of work, but the tsar they suffer, the boshas they suffer, is not a milsa de ispe chisaron kis. Arguably, most forms of knasos do not involve chisaron kis. The kefil, not the keren, but the kefil of a ganav, the dal of a hay of a ganav, not including the keren, does not involve chisaron kis. It's a deterrent. Or a very more practical example, which comes up actually in the simon, is edim zomamim. When there are two scenarios of edim zomamim when it comes to dinei mamonos. If two edim, so you know that the punishment for edim zomamim is that you do to the edim what they tried to do to the nidon. What are the Edim Zomim? Edim, I assume you all know this, I'm just stating it for Chazara purposes. Edim Zomim are Edim who were found to be false by virtue of the fact that they weren't present at the time of the Edus. What I mean by that is as follows, and this will come up later in Gemara Shir, not this week, but it will eventually come up. There are two kinds of contradicted witnesses. There's something known as Edim Uchashim. Two Edim say Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, two Edim say Reuven didn't borrow money from Shimon. What does the Beis Din do? They throw all the Edim out. Why? Because Beis Din doesn't know who to believe. Those are Edim Mukhashim. Now, no punishment for the Edim if we don't know for sure who's lying. Even, by the way, if two Edim say Reuven killed Shimon, and then Shimon walks in on his own two feet, they're still not Edim Zomim, they're Edim Mukhashim, but since we know they're lying, we give them Malkus for Losane. Edim Zomim, the issue is not about whether what they said is true or not. Edim Zomim say Reuven loaned money to Shimon on Tuesday, August 26th, and we saw it, and two Edim come and say, that's very nice, maybe Reuven didn't lend the money to Shimon, but you weren't there because you were with us in Acapulco, and you could not possibly have seen it. In this case, it's not the Edus which is contradicted, but the Edim were contradicted, and in this case there is, I'll say for the moment, Xeris Akasov, that we are mom in the second Edim, and we punish the first Edim by giving them the punishment that they wish to impose upon Reuven. Now, there is one caveat, and that is that you have to have a Gemara Din. If they testify that Reuven killed Shimon, and Beis Din was Gomer the Din, but they hadn't killed Reuven yet, then we kill the Edim. If there was no Gemara Din, or if they had already killed Shimon, I know it's a little troubling, but that's the famous case of kasher zema velo kasher asel. That's not the Gemara's makar. That you don't, once they kill them, you don't kill them. If there was no Gemara din, you also don't kill them. But if they got a Gemara din, but they haven't killed the nidon yet, so then you kill the edim zomim. The same is true by malkos. What about by mama? So here already it's been pointed out. So in order to punish the edim, they have to have had a Gemara din. But what if they already made Reuven pay Shimon the money? They say Reuven borrowed money from Shimon, based to make Reuven pay the money to Shimon, and now the edim are found to be false. So do you say kasher zema lo kasher asa? So here the Rishonim assume that it's not the case, that you do punish the edim, and you make take the money back, and plus you give the money back to Reuven, plus you make the edim pay Reuven money. Now, why is that so? So the one answer that's given by the Rishonim is that why isn't there a kavachomer that if the edim managed to kill Reuven, if the edim managed to get a gemara din on Reuven, you kill them. So if they killed Reuven, isn't it a kavachomer you should kill them? So the answer is ein onshin min adin. You can't give an onesh, a malchus or misa, from based upon a kavachomer. But mamon onshin min adin. It's not called onesh in effect. So mamon, you can make somebody pay from a kavachomer. So that's why even by mamonos, even if the edim succeeded in carrying out their plot, you still punish them with kasher zaman. So let's say edim became zelmanim. So what happened? Reuven paid Shimon the money. So what are we? So if we're going to talk about chisaron kis, what do we do in this circumstance? Theoretically, al pidin, Reuven should have two payments of, let's say, $100 coming to him. What are the two payments? One, from Shimon, whom he didn't owe money to. So he's just taking the money back. And two, what other $100 should he be getting? From the edim zelmanim. So the first pair is chisaron kis. That's the money that Reuven is out. But the second, the punishment to the edim, which is effectively meant, it would seem to function as a deterrent, so that is no chisaron kis, and therefore you wouldn't make the edim pay that money. So again, we have two requirements. It has to involve chisaron kis, and it has to be something that is shchicha. In light of that,
the gentleman says why they don't pay the court, why they pay the person.
No, but I think that's sort of a given. You mean they could pay it to anybody? Of course, they give it to tzedakah. The last thing in the world you want is giving it to the dayanim. If you give it to the dayanim, by definition, they can never judge because they know gebedah.
Right, so you put it in a trust fund.
One would never believe that dayanim would ever do anything dishonest, of course. But nonetheless, by definition, that would be no gebedinon, right?
So discretionary fund.
Correctly. Well, you know, we're going to learn it, but we're going to learn a cheska sabbatim about shuda d'dayne, which is extremely disturbing. It's not that they don't take it for themselves, but according, it's a machlokas harishonim what it means. But according to one sheet, that Rabbeinu Tam says, whatever the dayan, in some cases when there's a suffix, dayanim give the money to whomever they want, which is a little bit disturbing. I don't know what to do with it. Other rishonim say no, and that's not what shuda d'dayne means. It means they make a best guess that even though they don't have real evidence to go on, what they think the person wanted really done with the money. But anyway, so giving dayanim money is a bad thing. A dayan who takes money to be done dinim, so all his dinim are psulim.
Just in general, but if it's a deterrent, why does it go to the
who would you like it to go to? In other words, you're compensating for him suffering. How's that? Okay, fine. Anyway, in light of that background, so the principle basically is shlichus hayikah dinan, when something is shchicha and isbech chisaron kis. Two examples merit mention that are not going to be mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch before we read, which neither involves chisaron kis directly, but is treated like chisaron kis. Number one, the sugyan gittin that some of you might have looked at, isui al haget. Why are we allowed to force a person to give a get? So the answer is shlichu sayu. So the Rishonim asked the question, but it's no chisaron kis. So the Beis Yosef, at least quoting the Ran, or maybe not quoting, but the Ran says it first, says that igun is adef me chisaron kis. Right? If a woman's going to remain in anguna because she can't get a get because we aren't real dayanim and therefore we can't be mas on the get, so that's called chisaron kis. The other example of shlichu sayu kav dinan is gerus. Okay, even though there's no chisaron kis. Here the Beis Yosef writes that to be machnis someone tachas kan pe ashchina, that's also a davar gadol, and that's treated like chisaron kis. Those are the two cases outside of monetary situations where they talk about the Beis Din being done bizman hazeh based upon the principle of shlichus hayah. They both are very, very important things. Igun is actually more important than the gerus part. But nonetheless, those are the two examples where we say shlichus hayah outside of strictly perhaps mamonos issues.
Who explains why
the Beis Yosef. Well, I think I the Beis Yosef says, and I don't remember him saying anybody's name, but I think the Sma or the Tzos quotes it in the name of the Ran. As the same idea. It's pretty obvious. Pretty obvious. Okay. They are Shchiach. Igon and Geras are both Shchiach, yeah. Okay. Fine. Bizman Azeh, the Mechaber writes, Sifala, Donin Hatayonim Dine Hodos Vahavos. This is the only day that you don't have to read that I have to read. Bizman Azeh, Donim Hatayonim Dine Hodos Vahavos. So that's the standard case, Hodos Vahavos, which, by the way, as some of the Rishon, as the Ramban points out, I think, and the Tos quotes this in the Simen, Bizman HaMishnah already, non-smuchim, were doing Hodos Vahavos. They weren't doing Gzelos. Post the period of Smicha, when there was no longer, then Shlichusayah applies even to certain kinds of Gzelos as well. Now, historically speaking, there were two different tkufos. There was an earlier tkufa in which Shlichusayah was very limited, perhaps to Hodos Vavos, versus a later period in which we expanded the categories of what was included in Shlichusayah Kavdina.
Is after Smicha was totally gone?
I believe that's when they attribute it. In other words, I don't remember if they talk about Mishnah post or Shnag. I think it's when Smicha was gone, yeah. So then, what else? Ksubos Isha. Presumably, what's the reason by? Why is it that again we have non smuchim du adas vavos? The Gemara says, "Kidei shlotin odalas bifnei lavin." You want to oil the wheels of commerce. If you don't allow people to have ready access to conflict resolution, which in those days was really just dayanim, people are going to be reluctant to lend money, and that's very bad both for poor people and it's very bad for economics. So the same thing would be true for Ksubos Isha. If you don't allow Ksubos Isha, more women will be reluctant to get married. Yerushos and Matanos are basic types of everyday economic necessities. I mean, you could imagine if you had Yerushos and you couldn't resolve those issues. Umazik Mamon Chavero, a person who damages Biyadayim, the property of his fellow, Shehem Hadvarim Hamitsuyim Tamid. They are, in the Gemara's words, shchicha, v'yesh bahen chisaron kis, and they involve a loss. Aval dvarim she'ena mitzuyim, aval pi she'esh bahen chisaron kis. If they're rare, even though they do involve financial loss, kigon behema shechavla b'chaverta, one animal that wounds another, and some and the sma. And the Shach here both say that Niske, Bor, and Esh as well are included in this. The Ktos quotes Rishonim would disagree. He thinks it's wrong. If anything, I think the Shach later also says otherwise. Says that Bor and Esh we actually do. And this is very important, by the way. It's very important, at least theoretically, it's very important in terms of what is the basic scope of our Dayanim Hav Min Hadin. But a Behema Shachav LaBachaverta, one animal damaging another. Oh, dvarim she'ein bohem chisaron kis, things that don't involve financial loss, afal pishe mitzuyim, kigon tashlume kefel, it means only the kefel, not the keren, v'chein kol ha'knasos she'kansu chachamim kitokea l'chavera. Similarly, all knasos, which the chachamim instituted, if you look at the Mishnayos at the end of Perek HaChovel, so it lists a few separate actions where, if you did this to your friends, so that there were fixed fines that the chachamim instituted.
Which
in the Mishnah. How far back it goes, I don't know, but it's first mentioned in the Mishnah. So a person who's Porea Rosh Isha Bashuk, if someone strips off a woman's hair covering in public, so they were konis in Arba Meozuz. Right? And someone who's Soter L'Chavero, if he does it with the front of the hand, it's like 100. With the back of the hand, that's apparently more of a busha. So that's 200 or something like that. So they're fixed knasos. All these knasos, Uchasoter eschaver, that's the example I just gave. V'chein, so that those are knasos. V'chein, kol ha-mishalem yoser mimasha hezik. Someone who pays more than the actual damage he did, which is almost an automatic simon for a... Someone said it, say it louder. Knas, that's a simon of knas, that you pay more than you actually did. O she-mishalem chatzi nezek, or if you pay chatzi nezek on niske behemto, and there was a big machlokas in the first parak of Bava Kama, for those of you who might have learned, whether chati nezek, palganiska, knasa, or palganiska, mamona, bui paskin, Palga Niska Knasa.
Except for
Sarah. And Maran will get to that in a second. So regular Chati Nezek. So Ein Danano So. Ela Mumchim Hasmuchim Be'eretz Yisrael. With one exception to the Chati Nezek rule, as Moe just pointed out. Chutz Me Chati Nezek Tzoros. Mimnesha Mamamein Knas. Tzoros is this concept, Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, which is that if your animal is walking, instead of if it tramples naturally on something, if it's walking and it kicks up a pebble, in its natural course of walking, it's not stomping madly on the ground and kicking pebbles, but if it's just walking naturally and it kicks up a pebble and the pebble flies and does damage, that's called tzoros. Midina, you should have been chayiv nezek shalem, because that's considered, we'd have to do that damage in the Rosh HaSayachar actually. You should have been chayiv because that's normal, and a person has to guard his behemoth from that. But halacha l'moshe misinai chati nezek tzoros. You pay only half. You don't pay nezek shalim. But that is fundamentally mamon, and therefore the dayanim could judge it. Apparently, I don't know how common it was, but it would seem from the mechaber that it was actually something that was common, or common enough to allow dayanim to do. B'tzalem?
At what point did they fix what's considered shkia and what's considered not shkia?
I don't think it's fixed. I think that the Mechaber provides a definition, but I think it's subject to changing. In other words, I don't think it was that the last time... Look, some of this is hypothetical. I don't know that the last time Orayim of Eretz Yisrael got together, had a convention and said, we here, you know, for all purposes for the future, we now appoint all competent Rabbanim to do our shlichus. I don't think that actually happened historically. I think it's more of a conceptual sense of authority. In that the Chachamim would have wanted us to continue doing so. They did. In their day, they certainly wanted the Rabbanim and Bavel to be doing it. And so it's this extension of the same. What's that?
Zachin.
I don't know if I... But yeah, except for that there's also the Baal Din Luzes, it's Chavin. So bottom line is that
I don't...
for the Dayan. Why is it a Chus? Trust me, being a Dayan is not a Chus. And all you do is, it's like being a rabbi is not as, I encourage people, okay, believe Rabbanim. What's that?
It's a chus to have someone else be the dayanus for you.
Okay, so anyway,
I think
the shliach should, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't change. Yeah. I don't think, it's not presented as a gzera on these things. You know, hodos v'havos in the earlier period might have been a specific gzera. I don't get the sense that it's shchiyach. Now, in some ways, it's not practical anyway, and we get to the end of the simon, because but they didn't have to do at some point. Okay. But anyway, so that is the basic principle of our dayanus today. In principle, rests upon shlichusayu de kamoi. And shlichusayu de kamoi was limited to milsa de shchicha and isbe chisaron kis, or something that is the equivalent of chisaron kis, such as aguna or geirus. Jesse?
Just to clarify, shlichusayu Kavdin or Dikamai is like the acting as Shlichin from the last...
From the last Smuchin, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Ezra?
Do the Sephardi Moschim, or the Sephardi Rishonim, have a similar or any other justification like the Kalei Moschim have?
I think I don't know if it's stated explicitly. I think it's assumed. I don't think anybody disagrees on that. And look, the Gemara already says shlichusayu. What Tosus fills in is just the little detail. You know, this wasn't a fancy new Ashkenazi idea. In fact, I would even say I suspect that the Dayanim in Svarad, starting with the Gaonim, who are more rooted to the Gaonim in Bavel, are probably have a much more expansive view of the power of Dayanim. Just even in this simon, and the Gaonim are much more willing to take certain liberties. They're the ones who instituted. And some Chachmei Ashkenaz say, I'm not sure we really do this. But you look on the example that's going to come up in Sif Beis or Gimel, Beis, okay, it's right coming up about the Chamisha Dvarim, right? Adam Hamazik Adam. Pashtus in the Gemara, Pashtus is that you're not done at all. Because if you looked at the Gemara said that Adam ba'Adam we don't do. Because apparently it's Lo Shchicha. Yet the Rambam, and it's a question of how the Rambam read that Gemara, that's a very big question, how he reads that Gemara. For the Rambam understands that you can do Sheves and Ripoy. The Rambam had a very fun, firstly, Tsar and Boshas don't have our Ein Bo Chisaron Kis. The Rambam seems to understand that being only on Nezek. Okay, and the other two things, Sheves and Ripui, which involve real loss, real Chisaron Kis, you can't work, or you have to pay your doctor's bill, so the Rambam says that we're Megaba. Okay, but it's Chachmei Ashkenaz who say, no, we don't hear such things, we just make some type of pshar, we make them make peace and make them appease the Baal Din. In other words, they're the ones who move more away from, you know, a broader jurisprudential, you know, a jurisdiction for Dayanim.
as opposed to the German Ashkenazim?
I don't know the distinction. I didn't pay attention to that.
There was a start.
The Mordechai is German, right? Because he's a Talmud of the Marami Rutenberg.
Yeah.
So the Mordechai is one of the people who's chipping away at it. Do the earlier Balei HaTosfos, the standard Balei HaTosfos, I don't know. I'm not sure. I just don't know.
Where's the Tosfos where they say that it's just we're an extension?
Shlichus Sa'ad the Kama, I think it's in Gittin. I believe it's in Gittin Pei Ches. It's on the Makoro. The Tosfos is on the Makoros, but I believe it's on that Gemara. It's either there or in Achol, but I think it's in Gittin. Okay, any questions so far? Okay. By the way, I didn't announce it, but one of the incentives for coming Sunday, you're supposed to come Sunday because that's a yeshiva rule, and eventually also chase you down. But one of the incentives, and some of the guys are smiling now, is the last 15 minutes of shir, the floor is open to any questions you want to ask. Okay, the tape gets changed over. That part does typically not go online because it's not prepared, and you get to ask any questions that you want, anything in Torah Halacha Shkafa related. Okay.
Do any of the bans from last year carry over?
What's that?
Like, any of the bans from last year?
I don't remember what was banned, but I sometimes do eventually ban subjects, either because I get tired of talking about them or because I don't want to talk about them in this context.
Like
and if you and if you want to know about them, you'll have to come talk to me in private, yes. Okay, so anyway, just be aware. We'll continue now. Adam Shechava B'Chaveiro, was there a question? No. Okay. Adam Shechava B'Chaveiro, Ein Megabin Dayonim, She'enam smuchim be'eretz Yisrael, nezek tsar, ufgam uboshes. Pegam is strange because pegam really is nezek. Where does pegam spoken about in the Mishnah? Yehuda? Ones and mefate. Pegam there is the equivalent of nezek. I know this might not be in tune with modern sensibilities, but the pegam is that she's not a psula anymore. I mean, the truth is, in some ways, it's a straight economic loss because the ksuba is going to be reduced. So the Mishnah says that a mefata, Mishnah and ksubas in the third parak says that a mefata, one who seduces a nara, or the way we pass in katana, pays three things: pegam, which is the loss to the, in this case, to the father when he marries her off, in terms of the asking price, in effect, boshes, and it's the third, and the knas of mafateh of 50 kesef that the Torah prescribes, and an ones has to pay in addition to that tsar. So pegam is not usually pegam is the nezek. That's that kind of nezek. For some reason, the mechaber puts the two together here. The nurse came to talk about it a little bit. The kofar, okay, kofar is again it's the if your animal kill if you're sure or your animal killed a person. So this is not first thing, it's probably l'shchicha number one, and it's also not chisar and kiss. So dayanim cannot be gove these things. However, avol sheves ripu megadim. Why? Because it's shchia. At the assumption is it's shchia and isbe chisar and kiss. Fine. V'yesh omim the Maramah writes af ripu v'sheves ein donin. That's the rush. Now, what's interesting, in the Darkei Moshe, he seems to accept, he quotes one of the late Ashkenazi Yishonim and says, sure, we do this. It's not the Maril, I forget who it is. But then the Ramah himself says here, he doesn't say this in the Darkei Moshe, v'lo ra'isi no'agin l'dakdek b'zeh, we're not medakdek, ra'kofen ha'chove l'fayis ha'nechbal, v'likanso l'kifi ha'nire lahem. Now, we just forced the chovel, the person did damage, to make shalom. Obviously, he has to make shalom by paying. The question is, we're not going to go through a formal process of here are the doctor's bills, here's my the number of days I've taken off, here's my salary that I've been not paid by work. Rather, obviously, today it's easy to do those things, and once upon a time it was to figure out exactly. Rather, you sort of make peace. You give him an amount that the guy feels okay. You made good on the loss. Yes, AJ.
Is there interesting? Here it says kofin as opposed to communicate in other sources.
I don't know. I'm not sure what the Rama means. One of the ways of doing nido is a means of kviya. Some of you might have noticed that very colorful expression that the Torah quotes from the Rush, of which I will only cite in its Hebrew form, which is the nakat bekufse de l'shavke l'glime. And l'shavke l'glime means to let go of the thing that he's holding, the garment that he's holding. I'm not translating l'inakte b'kufse. You can read Rashi for the translation. That just tells you once upon a time that Rishonim and Achronim and Rabbanim were actually with colorful personalities. That expression's from the Gemara, by the way. But the point that the Rush makes is that nidui is forcing a person. Nidui is like physically forcing a person, because the consequences of nidui are so severe that's effectively forcing a person. You can't be menad to someone and say, I didn't force him to do it, you know, if you're trying to get to do something. Okay. Yes. Tzvi?
One clarification, if I may. The Gemara had at different points talked about knas, the Torah knas, and had talked also about kitzo, and you know, some sort of a set amount. Unless I said that wrong, kitzo, when I quoted that, but is there such a distinction, or are we assuming at this point, at the very least, that they are one and the same?
Davar katzuv is almost always knas, almost by definition. If not by definition, almost always. I can't think of an exception to the rule. Now, there are different ways of getting it at knas. One can be if you pay more or less than you damaged, but another way is looking at a fixed value, which by definition is going to wind up being more or less. I mean, the knasos in the Torah represent approximate value at the time of Matan Torah. In other words, one of the things that's been pointed out among scholars, those in favor of the traditional view Torah originating in the times that it purports to originate in, for example, is the fact that in Yosef's time, his brothers sell him for 20 silver. In Parshas Mishpatim, which is several hundred years later, 30 silver. And those prices correspond to the historical periods in which story ostensibly takes place, or to which ostensibly the Torah was given. That doesn't prove a lot of other things, but it undermines certain other assumptions. But nonetheless, at some point, those take on fixed values, and that's why we call them as knas. But even in the time the Torah was given, the 30 kesef of the Eved is a fixed value. The Torah was obviously well aware that there are more valuable of them and less valuable of them. So katsuv is one way that also equates to more or less.
Despite the fact that in the process of the Gemara, it differentiates, or at least a different time is mentioned.
It may use a different one, but I think it may be another way. You have to look also in which layers of the Gemara each is used, to see whether or not, you know, it's simply a question of which historical period, how are they, you know, what their reference point is. Yaakov.
In terms of what power are they able to appease Chov HaNechbal? What jurisdiction does that fall under?
So that's going to fall under Sifhei, really. Okay? General jurisdiction of Beis Din.
And they can just...
Which is, by the way, really, in effect, it's really Sif Beis, which is based in Makin Va'onshin Shalom and in Ravala Lavar al Devrei Torah. In other words, at some point, why is it that this area you'll find that
a lot of latitude,
you'll find, typically speaking, in the halachic process, Chachmei Ashkenaz will allow Minhag to override Gemara, and they'll make a fancy Yisha between the Minhag and the Gemara to explain why there's no Stira. Chachmei Svarad, the Rambam being most prominent amongst them, you know, will say that Minhag be damned, and the Gemara says X, and I don't care what everybody's doing, it's wrong. You won't find that in this area. The reason you won't find it is because for a society and for Bat Din to function, they do have to take liberties in effect. We might want to call based in Makom Shalom and Adin, because otherwise they can't function. That's effectively what you can have in Sifhei, and the Ramah is already getting to it here. So there is a distinction between those things that Bat Din can do Min Adin, and those things that Bat Din do Shalom Min Adin. And this is, in effect, the Ramah says, as opposed to doing Menadin, we do it Shalom Menadin. Okay. Sif Gimel. Behema shehiziko esa adam, ein govin nisko dayanim she'enam smuchim be'eretz Yisrael, v'pnei shudavar she'enam matzui. If an animal damages a person, you know the old story? Dog bites man. Is not a I guess it's not true anymore for a dog. The Shulchan Aruch assumes that dog bites man is a story also. You know, the story goes, dog bites man is not a story. Man bites dog, that's a story. So Bizmano Shulchan Aruch, apparently dog bites man was a story also. Okay, I suspect that, why do I think that Jews did not keep dogs in the Middle Ages as a general rule? Does anybody know any medieval history? What? I don't know. I'm just under the impression that Jews did not. What? Sure. Sure. Well, that is true. Certainly, that's going to be one issue. I'm under the impression that somehow, you know, Jews did not own those. I don't know, but apparently, according to the Mechaber, behema being ma'asik adam was not a common thing. Fine. Aval adam shehisik behemes chavero, that apparently man bites dog was a common thing. Mishalim yesik shalim. B'chol makom, v'chein behema sheizika b'shein v'regel, if an animal does damage to property, b'shein v'regel, which has to be done b'shus hayachid in order to be chayiv, and shein v'regel means the animal's normal behavior. It's not miskaven lahazik. Miskavin lahazik is abnormal in behema, and that's considered keren. Shein regal are things that happens in the normal course of walking, or it just chooses to eat, but only chayav on that brishus hayachin, not brishus harabin.
So keren would also be, if it would damage them with its keren in a non-malicious way, it would also be just as chayav?
Well, there's almost no such thing, because it's not that we give a personality test to the behema, but the fact is that a behema just goring things, you know, it had an itch on its horn, so it had to, which is the Gemara has an example, Nishacha Bakosa, but it's not on the horn. I don't think it normally, it's an animal which does damage, you know, by goring is considered abnormal. An animal which stumps is considered abnormal. You know, we don't give it a test of whether it's Miskavin Lahazik and it knows the financial damage. You know, does a behema step on the expensive glass vase as opposed to the pottery vase because it knows it causes more damage? Probably not. The Gemara has this one funny case in Bava Kamma. All right, about the shore which intentionally burned something down, because I don't know if the story really happened, because it wanted the ashes to roll in because they thought the ashes would cure it. Okay. I wouldn't put that past some primates, but even human primates. No, but bottom line is that that when it does things in a not just a normal course of things, that typically is keren.
If a dog is a behemoth because it's domesticated?
It's a chai, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so this is just a general.
It would be the same thing. It would be the same. In principle, it would be the same then. And I would say if dogs biting was shchicha, I don't know if there's shchicha even today. I mean, I know there are a lot of dog bites, but that's over a population of, you know, millions and millions of people. Don't ask me to determine exactly what's called shchicha. Shchicha is probably called a fibros ene hadayan. Fine. So anyway, v'chein behema sheizika b'shem regel hol v'hi muedes mitchilas ha'harezi davar matzo im megaben osan dayanim sheinam smuchim b'eretz Yisrael. The problem with with keren, even if the animal is muad, is that you can't make the animal to muad in the first place because basin doesn't sit on that because it's lo shchicha. Shein v'regel as muad is nezek shalim from the start. It's normal. Now, by the way, why is the Shulchan Aruch quoting this case even? Why does he start to break down these details? Because it's in the Gemara. It's straight out of the Gemara. That's why. Remember, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, an overwhelming majority of the cases are Dina the Gemara. Even if it's a funny case and you would not have chosen to quote this case, it's because it's coming straight out of the Gemara. V'chein misha gana, and by the way, Gemara points out that even if you had a behema that became muad in Eretz Yisrael and then went to Bavel, you also couldn't be done that because that's l'shchicha. Fine. People migrated and behemas didn't migrate as much. Okay. V'chein misha gana v'gazal megabim mimenu ha'keren bilvad. If someone stole or robbed someone, so you collect the keren alone. Now, there's a big machlokas Rishonim here, and that's what gets the Ramah started, and there's a long sma, and the shach is masik on the sma, and then there's a long tzos who agrees with the shach. As to the Mishnah I mentioned earlier, the first sugi in Sanhedrin says that in order to do gzelos, you have to be a mumcha, you have to be a samoch. So how can we do the gzelos here? So there are three shitos amongst the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that the only kind of gzelos that the Gemara said that we don't do, there's one of the Baal Yei Tosfos says this, are gzelos shayidei chavalos shayidei gzelos, the gzelos shayidei chavalos, I think. What is the expression? Gzelos shayidei chavalos. It means stealing by wounding you intentionally. And it's not really an act of gezel. That's one shita. That's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that you need mumchem for. But a regular gezel, that you don't need mumchem for. That's shchicha, and based on would allow us to judge it. A second shita is what the Ramah is going to quote here. B'yishomrim davka gzelos de shchicha kigon kofer bebikad b'chadoma. Aval gzela mamish. What's gzela mamish? What's the biblical paradigm? Good. Vayigzol asachanitz biyat miyat hamitzri. I think it's been Oyo ben Yehuda in the Bor HaSheleg, on the Bor and the Yom HaSheleg, in Shmuel Chaf Gimel. So that's the Kled. The Gemara says that's gezela. That's armed robbery, not with a weapon, but you yadayim you seized, literally armed robbery. Okay, and so that is what's lo shchicha. And therefore, you can't do those gzelos. You know what? You know, it's like Jews aren't bank robbers generally. What kind of crime, unfortunately, did Jews commit? White collar crime, right? Embezzlement. That's what Jews do. Okay, we have apparently a long history. That's shlicha. Armed robbery. We don't do armed robbery. We don't do weapons. We're not. I know. With no offense to any NRA members who might be in this room, we're weapons. You know. That's not what we do. At least traditionally.
So
Yeah, so that's the second shita. The third shita apparently is the shita of the Rambam, and it may be the shita of the Rambam as well. The Tos talks about this. It might be that the gzelos piece was limited. The Rambam assumes we do gzelos. The Ramban says that b'smetkufas hamishna you need a mumchah gzelos. Later on, when there are no smuchim, you need for gzelos as well. Because why did they distinguish in the time in the Mishnah between hodas and alvos versus gzelos? Because hodas and alvos are everyday things, and a person has really, if it's hard to get immediate, you know, judging, a guy's not going to want to lend the money. There's not so much in it for him. Remember, we're not allowed to take interest. So hodas and alvos are not like, you know, people are not going to want to lend money to people who need it if they're going to be a tircha for them to have to collect the money. Gzelos, on the other hand, if you have Dayanim Smuchim Eretz Yisrael, and sometimes they're floating around Bavel, so if you happen to be robbed, you really want justice, you'll go get justice somehow. And there are ways of doing it. Even if you don't go to Eretz Yisrael, you can be Tover the guy to go to Eretz Yisrael. If he doesn't want to go, then you may have recourse within Bavel itself. But Bisman, where there are no Smuchim anywhere, if you don't allow Dayanim to do Gzelos, then you're going to end up being Poseach Deles Bifnei HaGazlanim. And we have to be Noel Delas Bifnei Osei Avla, the expression that Rishonim use. You have to close the door in the face of those who want to commit injustice, you know, iniquity. And therefore, Bisman, that there's no Dayanim Smuchim anywhere, then Gzelos is something that we can do as part of Shlichus Sayu. Pashtus is that's what the Sheet and the Mechaber doesn't make any distinction in the Beis Yosef or here. He holds you can do all Gzelos. The Sma wanted to say he held that like the Balei HaTosis, I think, only Chavolosh Ayde Gzelos you can't do, but regular Gzelos you can do, but the Shach disagrees. He says they can do all kinds of Gzelos. I'm not really sure exactly what Gzelos Ayde Chavolosh are. I'm not really sure what that is, because it has to be something beyond general Chavolosh, but I don't want to answer that question now. Bottom line is the Mechaber says you can do all Gzelos, the Ramah says only white collar crime. Yes, Emmanuel, your question?
No, the first one is, you're not sure what it means, Chavolos.
I don't know what, I could have told you that 100 times. I'm trying to figure out what that means now, actually. I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
What is Gzelos Shadei Chavolos?
I don't remember, but I remember the Tosfos talks about
it. Does he explain exactly what it is? Okay, in Sanhedrin. Okay, so you look there. What's that?
It's the first type, Chavolos Shadei Gzelos.
No, Gzelos Shadei Chavolos.
I thought you said both.
No. Gzelos Chavolos is Gzelos Shadei Chavolos.
And the Ramban is the third shita?
The Ramban is the one who makes the distinction between post-smicha, you know, versus while there was smicha. The Ktzos quotes the Ramban. Okay. At least I'm not quoting Psukim from the Ktzos, just Ramban. Fine. One more sif here, and we'll save the good stuff, I guess we'll get to next week. Dina de Garmei. Dina de Garmei is a big machlokus in the Gemara, but the Shulchan Aruch assumes we're dining Dina de Garmei. Okay, it's machlokes for man the chacham. Garmei is some type of causative damage. There may be a distinction. Most Rishonim assume there's a distinction between grama and garmei. Grama ben izakin is pater avalasa. You're not allowed to do it, but you're not. It's not actionable in a court. Garmei, for example, what's an example of garmei? Dina de garmei? Sorif shtarosov shel chavero, by which the shtar doesn't actually mean anything, but it allows a person to collect. Without the shtar as a right, you can't collect. Sorif shtarosov shel chavero is dina de garmei. And we pass like Rabbi Meir the Dainina Dina de Garmei. So Dina de Garmei, the Mechaber says, V'chein HaMoser, this was very important in the medieval period. Okay? I'm not going to discuss the Gedana Mamoser right now. I think on Rabbi Broid's syllabus some point later in the year, Dina Moser, and we will deal with it then. But just suffice it for those curiosities, they may be more than opinions, but I am a Talmud of Rav Shechter, generally, and specifically in this case, who assumes there's a derech klal, there's no such thing as moser in this country, because if you're dealing with a system, a basically equitable justice system, so by definition it's not shelo kedin, it's kedin, and therefore moser almost never applies. Not going to say never, there might be circumstances, but they would be the exception, not the norm.
What's
the
grama?
Grama is also a causative example. You know, there are cases in the second parak in Bava Basra about if I have some of my stuff near the property line and it's causing damage indirectly sort of to your prop, you know, it's not biyadayim, so that would be grama. Okay. So dinei moser donner son dayanim she'enam smuchim beretz Yisrael. The Ramah says, and we spoke about this already, we'll just read it, edim she'yu de'edu sheker v'huzmu v'otziu maman alpiyam v'efsha lemihadar donner son v'chayven nosan l'shalim. If you can't get the money back, if you made Ruvain pay Shimon and Shimon, you know, left the country, then you make the Edim pay. But then you can be done Edim Zomim. But otherwise you're not, because you just take the money back from Shimon, because by right it's not his. And you don't punish the Edom because that would be Knossos. That would be the Knoss of Edom Zelmanin. Right. Any questions so far? Yeah, Ear? Yehochashu, as a general rule, you don't know who's right and wrong. So if they made him pay the money already, I think by Hochashu, in terms of the money, it would go by whoever's mosak on it, because it's a suffix. We don't know who's... In other words, if he didn't pay yet, because the Edom HaMachishim came forward, we won't make him pay. Once we made him pay already, I don't know if he could get the money back. But we wouldn't punish the Edom, because we don't know who's lying. Okay.
Any questions?